This is Alexander. I'm Pau, and today we're going to speak about the Osmocom EPDG project, which is basically used to do voice over Wi-Fi. So that's not voice over waffle; it's voice over Wi-Fi. What's voice over Wi-Fi? So basically, the idea is that you may have no, for instance, LTE connectivity, but you're still connected to a Wi-Fi spot. So basically, you can get and make calls over the Wi-Fi to the 3GPP network. What's the current state regarding that, and why of this project? So VoLTE was already there, so Open5GS supports it, and then you can run an IMS core with Camaleo. There was missing VO Wi-Fi support. And for that, we basically need a new node in the network, which is called EPDG. And then also the EPDG talks with an AAA server, which it's not there, like, for instance, in Open5GS, let's say. We were fortunate to get a grant from the NLNet Foundation to implement an EPDG, which was not there in open source yet. The conclusion, of course, is that we implemented an Osmo EPDG project, which actually implements an EPDG plus its AAA node. We'll start a bit with the code architecture, and I'll need the pointer. Thank you. This is actually not like the regular architecture one would expect with regards to the EPDG, but it's our implementation of an EPDG. And I'll explain why. So usually you'll have the UE, of course, and then you'll have all of these could be the EPDG, all in here, and then it could connect to a 3GPP AAA server here, then a PGW. So this would be basically the same, but you see that actually we did some stuff differently here. So usually this would be together, this could be separate, but we did the other way around. Why is that? So we did that because in here there's actually an IPsec link which needs to be made between the EPDG and the UE, and actually StrongSwan is doing that already. It's an IPsec implementation with IKIP. Doing the authentication here was actually far easier than actually usually doing it here because we have already code here, so that we really decided to basically do the authentication here. Since we don't need to do it here anymore, we just thought, okay, it's easier just to implement this together in one process, and that's what we are doing.
Yeah. There are also plans to, so we in the Osmo EPDG, we already prepared the split, so there's already a separation in the code where this is the EPDG part, this is the AAA part. So it could be later separated, but yeah, as the StrongSwan was far much easier than to use the current StrongSwan architecture than splitting out EAP out of StrongSwan to pass it down to the AAA, which is a little bit similar like in Wi-Fi, where you also have like the radios and which pass the EAP towards the access point which pass the EAP traffic to the radio server.
Yeah, so what we showed before was how it showed how the control plane was implemented. And this shows in a summarized way how the user plane goes. So again, the control plane was negotiated between the UE and StrongSwan. And then StrongSwan will actually configure the Linux kernel to set up all the, how they are called, X-frames stuff?
XFRMs.
Yeah, XFRMs. Yeah. It gets encapsulated here, the IPsec, and we actually then from the EPDG process, which is written in Erlang, we just control some GTP tunnel kernel module through Netlink, and then we basically just connect to the PGW using GTPU. And we basically route the traffic from here to here using FW marks and other routing measures.
So yeah, why StrongSworn? So when we started the project, we looked at the current tools and open source components which are there. So the important part was, do we have to implement IPsec, like IKA version 2 or so, the encryption, the authentication, and actually StrongSworn already got all those parts in there, so we only had to figure out how can we pass authentication tuples towards StrongSworn, so StrongSworn would do everything, and also it's even flexible if you want to, let's say, switch the user plane from the current all in kernel to a different, like with tune devices or yeah, whatever you like, it's still configurable and also extensible. And yeah, this was the reason why to use StrongSworn. There also wasn't so many other projects which implemented IPsec. And yeah, so how we, also it looks like that other people already done an EPDG in a similar way, found here and there small bits and pieces that other people also thought the same idea, let's use StrongSworn for as an EPDG, but I haven't found any other code in there, so they only announced it on tickets or mailing lists. And also it have an extensively plugin architecture. It even had for EIP, AKA, you can pass authentication as a CSV file, as also as different, yeah, there are different options how you can pass authentication. Also it has a lot of hooks. So basically we only had to implement a plugin, also called Osmo EPDG, which is sometimes a little bit confusing that you have the Erlang daemon. It's also called Osmo EPDG and the plugin, but we only had, I think, two patches for StrongSworn, which are not so big, and all the other stuff was just using upstream. Yeah, okay. And we also went for a small protocol between the StrongSworn and the Erlang component, and actually, it quite looks similar enough to just use GSUB. So in Erlang, we already had GSUB. Yes, in StrongSworn, we had to implement it. Also, the StrongSworn architecture is a little bit different than LibOsmoCore, for example. It's heavily based on threads and, yeah, and also using then logs, mutexes, and everything. But yeah, so far we're using GSUB there. It's also like we're using send authentication information, do a location update. From that point of view, we only had one additional request response to mimic the, yeah, to mimic the EPDG, but otherwise we could just also reuse most of the protocol messages there and also reuse the Wireshark dissectors. Mm-hmm.
We just need to update some of the fields, like add PCO fields and something about the IP addresses, being able to pass IP addresses, which should be needed anyway at some point on the HLR, which is also using GSUB, yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I don't think if I can really make it. No, it's
squat. Are you trying control plus?
Yes, but
it. There's a sliding also, if you use the, what is it, a größer or kleiner Zeichen, try this.
No, I can only make it smaller, but not bigger. Okay, yeah, because sure. It's an image, I think. Yeah, so this is more or less the structure of the StrongSworn component. So the core is just passing us hooks, and yeah, we have different parts of it where we can just hook into it, just register a callback, and that's it.
So yeah, I'm going to explain a bit like the Osmo EPDG project, which, if you remember, just was on the Erlang domain and stuff. So this project is available in osmoepdg.git in the like regular places in OsmoCom repositories. As you saw earlier, it basically implements both the, well, a part of the EPDG node, because the other part, as we showed, is actually in StrongSworn. But it implements part of the EPDG node and also implements its own integrated AAA server. Then, actually we mentioned this already, to implement the GSUB towards the StrongSworn, we just used Erlang repositories, which we already had implementing GSUB, and also SS7 for IPA, which is used below GSUB. Then for the other interfaces, which are diameter based, like the S6B and SWX, connecting like to the HSS and to the BGW. We actually use this extension of Rebar 3, which is the diameter compiler, which basically allows defining a set of fields or ABPs for diameter messages, and then just get Erlang code for free. Well, maybe saying for free is a bit optimistic, because we actually found some bugs. We reported some of them. They are looking into it. They can be overcome. It generates bad code sometimes because it actually doesn't pull like inherits of inherits, and sometimes you end up with broken code, and there's no really easy way to figure out. What more? There's still another diameter interface, which is called SWM, which usually actually connects the EPDG with the AAA. Since, as you remember, we just joined together the AAA with the EPDG. Of course, there's no need for that. Still, we implemented it internally using Erlang messages so that it can be later on split into two processes and just change this Erlang messaging with generated diameter messages over the wire. Finally, the S2B interface, which is the one the EPDG uses to talk to the PGW, to the SMF. We implemented that protocol in Erlang using the gtplib.git module, which we had to fork from TroubleBing to be able to forward encoded PCO. So at some point, there's some PCO negotiation between the UE in ICAP 2, is it called? Sorry. Mm-hmm. Well, the SWU, so the protocol which the UE speaks with StrongSwan. Yeah. It's not called PCO there, like the regular GSM PCO, but it's some kind of similar stuff in there. So we just convert that to PCOs and then just send them over GSAP. And at the same time, this PCO information is also sent to the PGW. But in this case, since we are already receiving like encoded PCOs, there was no way for gtplib to actually just like pass already encoded PCOs. You had to pass decoded PCOs. So we just modified gtplib for that. So we don't need to decode and then re-encode all the PCO information. Then for the user plane, as I mentioned, we use this GTP kernel module tune device, and to access it using Erlang, we use this GTP UK mod module, which in turn depends on two other modules, GenNetlink and GenSocket, which were developed by TroubleBing, which we also had to fork for different reasons, like to add some specific features we needed, and actually because they were failing with newer Erlang versions. I submitted some patches, but to be honest, look like they are really unmaintained. So I didn't even get any answer, and looks like there's been no movement there for some time already. So looks like they are not really being used anywhere. We are just running our forked versions of those. And then the TuneDev, the GTP module is actually GTP kernel module, which is then forwarding the traffic to the PGW, is actually then created through Netlink using these Erlang modules. And this is actually configured just on the config file, which these modules actually read directly. So it's not really like specific config file for Osmo EPDG, which then gets passed to those modules. It's just like directly read by those. Basically what EPDG does, Osmo EPDG does, is just setting up this TUN device, or this GTP kernel device, and just like when a new UE is connected, then just tries to basically first create a PDP context on the GTP kernel device, and after being created on the PGW, and also tearing it down. And there's something more here. There's some routing involved there, which is configured actually outside of the process, which is just to, as I mentioned earlier, just to route stuff in and out of GDP and in and out of IPsec. So the BDG is really just forwarding traffic from this kernel module to the IPsec. This is an example, just like for completeness, of the Osmo PDG config file, just to have, you basically can configure for each interface, like the different local ports, IPs, and watchdogs, diameter stuff. And maybe like the different stuff comes at the end when configuring all the Toon device. This is, of course, a template, so you'll see like lots of variable stuff. But yeah, you can configure like which NetNS do you want to use for the Toon device. And then, yeah, you also have to specify role as GSN so that the Toon device, well, the GDP kernel device is created properly. And yeah, we had to add this GenSocket stuff. I don't remember why right now. Ah, yeah, because some module is using some C library, which needs some specific path to be loaded. But yeah, that's it. I think, that is still mine. Regarding Open5JS part, so that relates to the PGW. Most of the stuff was already there, so we didn't really need to do a lot of work there. Only few stuff like, so I was talking about before the PCO IE, which is used to pass information like DNS address or PCSC address. But actually, when you are using the S2B interface, which is this GTPv2C interface between the EPDG and the PGW, actually, the PCO IE is not used, but you are using another IE, which is called APCO, which is mostly the same as the PCO, but it's just with different name and different IE number. So that was not there, and we just had to add that. It was pretty quick. While developing TDC and 3 tests, also from we figured out there were some bugs for the GUI interface when using the S2B interface, and that was also fixed. And then what's mostly needs to be done nowadays on Open5JS is just configured like the configuration file. So just set the PCSCF IP address in the SMF so that it can be forwarded to the EPDG. And also, yeah, configure the HSS to allow the IMS IPN. And I'm handing over.
Yeah, so the next components, even we only developed the EPDG where the phone connects to do the same as Volta. We also had to get an IMS working, which we are using Camaio, as I think most of the people are using Camaio. And that had also some problems and unexpected behavior, like the current version wasn't such stable, so we found some smaller problems with uninitialized arguments where I thought, did anybody still use it, or was it just lucky because I had a different system which had different initialization values, because null was fine, but anything else, so we also had one patch there. Also the dial plan was, I only know rarely Camaio before. I mean, we used it at the Congress setup to transcode, but I didn't know it before. And yeah, I looked into it, how the dial plan works, and calls are now working from phone to phone, but it also, yeah, usually those IMS setups are meant that you have there behind another PBX like free switch, asterisk, or something. Camaio should only be more likely as the front end, and the back end is something more. So let's go more into the UE now. So the UEs are like, I mean, some of you tried out Volta, it was also like flip a dice, flip a coin, does it work, does it not, what do I have to do? So I also had to look into it because, yeah, some UEs might be nice and just work that way, but usually they don't. I haven't found a single phone which just behaved like I would expect it. I didn't test it so much. I tried to have different basebands like Qualcomm, MediaTek, Pixel, but I concentrated most on the Pixels. So, but let's go with what a phone should usually do if you want to have voice over Wi-Fi activated. So there are a couple of SIM card related files. I'm still unsure when they really apply, when not. I don't know. I would love to know. I would love to read the code directly to know it. So also every phone has its own UE configuration, but usually what it should do if it doesn't have coverage or if it has Wi-Fi coverage and voice over Wi-Fi is enabled, it should do just a DNS query, where should I connect to the EPDG, and then do the IKA, the IPsec, and within the IPsec it should do the regular SIP, and also the IMS also has a second IPsec, or better to say only the user plane of IPsec, so it's IPsec and IPsec a little bit. Hopefully I can get this bigger, no? Oh, yeah. Yes. So here you see a regular array how it should do. I skipped the specific IKA version parts, but you can basically see how the authentication how it usually should work from the UE side. Doing the DNS. Here we have the Osmocrom test setup as an IP. Then it's setting up and your traffic gets forwarded from the EPDG to the PGW and over it to the IMS. And also, even in theory, it would be possible to just route any traffic over it. It's only usually used for, or I only have found it, it's only for voice. And so, yeah, you do a SIP register, then you get the answer, you're unauthorized, then you get the AKA challenge, which is an UMTS auth or a Millenage authentication over EAP, and then you answer it, and after you answer it, you also have exchanged the IPsec within it. So for testing, I mean, we don't have an MMC, so you have to do one DNS override, because I tried to work around, but the easiest way was to just have a DNS entry. Yeah, the phones are still a little bit of a black box, so I was always working with just a DNS override and pointed it to the correct one. So back to it, what should a phone do? But usually it's more likely this way, and they have all different kinds of other behavior. I'm not sure if you can control this behavior, but it was quite a lot different behaving. So back to get a little bit background also for Android, to enable voice over Wi-Fi, it depends on your phone, but usually you have to create a carrier profile. And either carrier profiles are shipped with the Android, there are XML files, you can also just find it in the repository, and or you install an Android app, and like the Open Mobile Network and also from Surprise, the Core IMS, they both set a carrier profile in Android, but it's still not enough. And yeah, the carrier profiles, you can select it by different meanings, so different MVNOs and so on. So let's take a short look on the Pixel devices I used for testing and had a lot of pain, a lot of issues with it. So if you want to test yourself. So when I started, I usually had two phones there, or had my regular phone. I put in an Osmocrom SIM, and it then just worked. But then I had a second test phone only for testing, and it didn't work. And it seems that I insert a commercial phone which has voice over Wi-Fi enabled into the phone, put it out again, put Osmocrom in, and it works. But only also if you have carrier permissions. But I have no idea what's triggering in the basement. I've seen log files, they looked all right. Yeah, I have no idea. I would love to find out more. But even afterwards, so I started with Pixel 6, so it doesn't do ESP protection. Does SIP register answer? Has the new ESP, has the new IPsec parameters for the inner IPsec, but just don't do IPsec. It connects to the different port, but forgets about IPsec. I thought also the Pixel devices are much more closer. I hope for having the same bugs everywhere, but now it's a little bit too big. Also found like oh, this Pixel 7 doesn't encode it right. I mean, it depends on the network. It's not important what it is, something for security. So the network can request some replay protection and authentication. And what you see here, it's missing some. or you remove the comma, but yeah, it's I'm wondering. The good part about it, I tried to report it, and I found a way to report this bug, and they answered, yeah, we already knew it should be fixed in the next basement update. I couldn't try it yet, but there could be by now a new basement update which fixes this small problem. So yeah, if the IMS doesn't require the replay counter, it works, because yeah, there are not two values in there. I also tested with an iPhone, because the new iPhone seems to look quite good for testing. You even can, there's a button, you enable voice over Wi-Fi. It does voice over Wi-Fi. On Android, I never had this feeling. Even there are the buttons there, but it seems more likely a recommendation. The iPhones really worked from this regard very well. Except don't use MCC 999, because since the new patch, they don't allow anymore to support voice, and also don't scan anymore the frequencies we are using on events. So also a lot of the people who installed in eSIM, they can't use it anymore since the new update. But also Pixels, also iPhones behave a little bit different. So yeah, they don't have IPsec support in my testing. I don't know why it's not there. Maybe it's also some configuration, but yeah, it just doesn't do IPsec, and my Camayo setup required to have IPsec in my setup. That's a little bit sad. So other phones, Qualcomm, at least I know they have ACLs which you can patch, and the people reverse engineered it, how to do it. Also, there are lots of stuff around it. MediaTek, I don't know. I bought a MediaTek phone, tried to it, but it also didn't work. Maybe I have to revisit again, but same for it. And yeah, I don't know about other vendors. I haven't tried even more. It was a lot of pain, just try and error working with black boxes. But yeah, finally it works. I can call from one Pixel to another, or at least Pixel 7. I'm currently using 7a, and yeah, it works so far. We have created an Ansible test setup for people to quickly install the setup, which is just 3 VMs, and you have to add a couple of keys. But we are using Ansible, which is a way to describe Linux machines to reproduce the same setup.
Maybe explain why VMs.
Why VMs? So the problem is also we are using quite a lot of kernel features like the GTP tunnel, also the IPsec features, and it looks like that some of the features doesn't like network namespaces. At least GTP doesn't support network namespaces. We had here and there problems with it, so we switched from containers to VMs. Without the kernel features, it can work. It's a little bit slower. I think the Osmo EPDG must be a little bit different to the GTP in software.
In order to develop the Erlang part of the EPDG project, so Osmo EPDG, which again conforms the EPDG node plus the AAA, as usual, also we wrote some new test suite using TTCN3, which you can find in the regular places like Osmo TTCN3hacks.git and dockerplayground.git. So it's just running nightly. And we have 15 tests so far using like usual stuff, so not like super comprehensive. Especially not covering many failing cases, but at least like for the regular cases, it's there already. Testing like attachment or detachment or setting up. We are also slightly testing user plane is working, going through. That's it basically.
Yeah, so there's also one really nice Python tool. I think Harald mentioned it in one of his talks about Volte and voice over Wi-Fi some earlier. There's this nice Python script, which is SWU IKA version 2, so it's a really nice name. It's a Python script which implements basically everything except crypto primitives. So it's implementing IKA version 2, ESP, EAP authentication, so really everything, 3.5k single file, which does everything. It's really nice for testing. It also opens a Tune device on Linux, so you can also even use a commercial SIM card to connect to networks, and also, yeah, it supports hard-coded key values for SIM cards or PCSSD, and also some HTTP server to collect the authentication. And yeah, it was really great to test and figure things out. Yeah, it was much faster than booting a phone and try to find out why it's not working. The script was really helpful. Developing it and testing some stuff. So
yeah, I'll go. I do. Yeah. Okay. So for future work, as it was mentioned several times, we have the AAA plus DPDG together into its own process. It's already quite split like properly inside the code, so it's really like running in parallel with different Erlang modules and so on. And as I mentioned, like we are just implementing the SWAM interface with each message, but just using Erlang messaging. So yeah, of course, one of the next steps could be just to implement the SW diameter wiring between them, and then it's just really a matter of small refactoring to have like two processes just running. That means also that at some point that would allow for using external AAA. Of course, that would also mean that we need to move the authentication stuff from StrongSwan to be done on the AAA side. In general, we didn't implement yet inner IPv6 support in GTPVU. I don't recall exactly, same for outer, I don't recall exactly which were the restrictions in each of them. For some of them, I know like the kernel GTPU module didn't support IPv6 until basically now, because I think I'm not sure if they were already merged, or do you know?
Submitted,
but not yet merged. But yeah, I mean, it should be there soon.
Yeah. So one of the big problems is there that all the IMS is specified as you must support IPv6. We currently don't do it because we want to use the kernel support. So, I mean, most of the parts are already there to just support IPv6, but yeah, currently we only support IMS, which supports IPv4. So yeah, it's quite important if you want to do it in a real network.
Mm-hmm. Also, like we only configured so far and tested GTPv2C towards the PGW using IPv4. It's probably just updating some of the structures there or fields to also cover the IPv6 case. So again, something that should be done, but should hopefully not be a lot of time. As I mentioned earlier, we got like several patches in several projects, like modules originally written by TroubleBing, but some of them they have been submitted, some of them not, because since I basically receiving no feedback, I just stopped doing that. They are available, of course, publicly in our fork repositories.
Yeah,
you may want to talk about this one?
Yeah, for StrongSwan, we currently don't implement any notify payloads, so the phone talks to the EPDG. It's a little bit similar to the MME or the SGSN, so you do authentication, but currently we don't provide any error codes at the moment. So if the authentication fails or if the network rejects the UAE, we currently don't supply the network errors. And also it's possible to request the IMEI over notify payloads towards the UAE, which we also currently don't collect. That's also to do for the future work.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Cool. especially again to NLNet for funding of the project. Yeah, questions indeed. Oh. Ah, yeah, we have the both.
You mentioned about like running in a VM, right? Like, do you see any restrictions from the, or not restriction? Like, do you have to use a particular kernel version or something? Or the reason why I'm asking is I was thinking of integrating into the like the Docker OpenFJS probably. So, is it like a major issue? Like, you know, using in a container.
So far I remember that currently there are subsystems which doesn't support network namespaces. For that reason, I don't think you can run it in Docker. And I think the most important parts were, I'm not quite sure, GTP. I have to look it up. But there are problems which are not supported even on current kernels.
But if I may add, I mean, the GTP kernel module is...
If I may add, actually, I mean, we are running, as I said, like the DCN3 test suite inside Docker lightly. And we are also testing a bit like the traffic, and at least for the GPU kernel module is working. So that at least that part should work. I'm not sure about like the IPsec side of things, but at least starting from the EPDG node, yeah, it's working. So in Docker.
So basically, if we restrict the phone to do only IPv4, then I think we shouldn't have any having to need a particular kernel version or something, right?
Yeah, yes, so maybe it was the IPsec part first. Yeah, I don't recall right which component didn't support it. But if you IPv4 just works then there, but yeah.
When you mean IPsec, is it the strong swan part of it or the Camaleo part of it?
The strong swans part of it.
No question, just I'd like to say it. This is a really great project, a very complex project, so I'm happy to see this slide today.
So regarding the test suite and GTP kernel module, we actually do run QMU for that. Might be that we run QMU inside Docker, but since we need the kernel module and since we want to test not only, like there are two ways. For one, we test the kernel module in Debian where it's actually enabled by default. So if you run Debian, you get the GTP kernel module with IPv4. That should work. But also we test from source like kernel, current master, and so on, where we will soon have the IPv6 stuff in there, and that's why we run it in QMU in addition to that.
But the QM stuff, I think it's when you are testing the GGSN, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but I think I didn't do that when testing EPDG. I'm just running it directly in Docker, I think. I'm not sure. I don't think I'm using QEMU there. I mean, maybe you added it, but I for sure didn't touch any QEMU stuff. So
actually, no, they're not. I was talking about the GGSN stuff because, so then you can only test IPv4, but that...
Now I understand what you mean. Okay, I just... was thinking that you were saying that you needed QEMU to actually have it working. So no. Okay.
Maybe also to clarify Sapri's question earlier, to say that there is no kernel feature that was introduced recently that you require to run this project, except for IPv6 support, which may be available soon in the future. But for whatever you have running now, it doesn't matter whether you use a kernel from yesterday or a kernel from 2 years ago. It doesn't have any specific, or 3 or even 4, probably even 5 years ago.
It just might be that the GTP kernel module is not enabled in your distribution. So.
The big GTP, is that the one? Or?
Yeah, the kernel module.
But in this project, we are not using libgtpnl. I mean, we are just like using some Erlang module, which actually talks Netlink directly. So there's really no...
Yeah,
so... Because I remember that the libgtp has this restriction of having to use kernel 5.15 or something, right?
One would have to look at really like the Netlink messages that this gtpuk mod Erlang module is using to make sure that the... it's supported well and it's not failing for whatever reason on some, God knows, older kernel versions. But yeah.
So regarding the kernel module, I requested like many years ago, probably 10 years ago or whenever it was, requested to Debian that they enable it by default. That's why Debian has it, builds this module all the time, but I don't know about other distributions. Right, I guess there could be other distributions that don't build this module during the normal kernel build and then it's not available. But yeah, I mean, that's I have no idea what all those distributions are doing.
Yeah, so it's all very complex, right, for something that we essentially, a functionality we could already do. I just have an anecdote, maybe it's interesting. I was just in relation to saying that the phones are generally black box, you know, and it's very frustrating whenever you're working with something like that. But just as I'm traveling around, I noticed that, so I have the SIM card from Mexico, and when I got here, I brought up my VPN to Mexico, and I expected then the voice over Wi-Fi would connect. It didn't. So I thought, okay, so it says it's roaming, it's connected to the network provider here, so I go to network selection and manually select a network that doesn't allow roaming, and so the phone loses the network signal, and then the voice over Wi-Fi kicked in. So then I was trying the voice over Wi-Fi, and then I, while it was still registered, I did something with the router and the VPN routing through Mexico went down, but I noticed the voice over Wi-Fi was still working. So initially I assumed that the provider specifically says that you're not allowed to use voice over Wi-Fi when you're not in Mexico, and I assumed that this would be related to GOIP or something, but it actually seems that it's related to the fact that the SIM is registered to a not Mexican network. So as soon as I don't do that, although I didn't actually verify that the voice over Wi-Fi was able to initialize connection without the VPN. So so maybe, you know, with the phones saying it didn't connect, maybe in changing the SIM card from one provider to another provider, who knows what part of it is actually stopping the voice over Wi-Fi connection there.
I haven't looked into the roaming case of IMS, but you can configure if you connect also to the roaming partner or if you go to the home network. You don't have to necessarily do voice over Wi-Fi calling to your home network. You can also do it to the roaming network as well. And it's all, there are different parts. You can configure and the network can also influence, also the roaming network can influence if you can do voice over Wi-Fi or not.
Yeah, so it's like generally, like in LTE as well, you can have a voice over LTE. You can either have the PGW always in your home network, the home routed case, or you can have the PGW in the visitor network, and then you roam at the IMS level to your home network, right? So there's multiple different ways how this can be achieved, and it's the same with voice over Wi-Fi. Yeah.
So even with voice over Wi-Fi, then it's connecting to the somehow to a roaming provider's IMS, which is then
it can work both ways. So it's both. So for example, I was in the UK and I got my voice over Wi-Fi calling went over O2 Germany. I got an IPv6 address from O2 Germany, so I suspected that it's roamed to O2 Germany. But you can have both. You can have both ways.
I mean, normally the default case, if everything works according to spec, which, as we see, hasn't, I mean, it would do that DNS lookup for the IMSI's EPDG. So, assuming that you don't have a multi IMSI SIM card that changes its IMSI, you would still have your Mexican IMSI here in Germany, and then it would do the DNS lookup for the MCC, whatever Mexico is, I don't know, and so on, and it would connect to the EPDG over there. But, of course, there can be all kinds of overrides. People could play with DNS, so it could be some config somewhere else, or, as I said, I mean, in some cases, your IMSI might change when you travel abroad due to this kind of multi-IMSI cards, and then that lookup, DNS lookup, would check a completely different EPDG, so... lots of different potentially strange cases.
And also, just as I mentioned the other day, I did notice this phone also won't attempt voice over Wi-Fi until it completes its Google connectivity check.
Yes, it also depends. So you can, for example, you can do the voice over Wi-Fi in the baseband. You cannot also do it in the operating system or somewhere in between. For example, I'm not sure how it's currently, but a couple of years ago, Broadcom was the most common Wi-Fi chip. But your SoC wasn't from Broadcom, so heavily integrated solutions. Yeah, it all depends how the baseband works. You can have it in the OS, you can have it in the baseband, you can have something between. Every vendor is doing it a little bit different.
Yeah. Okay, good. Then, thanks again for the talk.